Attention all units. We've got our sights on a new episode of Andor. We're gonna need some recon on this. Tango Squadron, on your six. Mission's all yours, Squadron Leader. To anyone else on this comm link, send all transmissions to andor@thelorehounds.com and get holocron bonus episodes for 10 credits with our season pass in the show notes. Rebels, may the Force be with you.
Welcome back to one last week of the Lorehounds Andor podcast. I'm John from the Lorehounds, and we're your guides to a galaxy far, far away. This is our coverage of episode 10 of Andor season 2, titled Make It Stop. With the weekly triple drops of this season, we've been doing our coverage squadron style, and we're doing the same thing this week. I handle the first episode, Alicia will handle the second, and David the third, with each of us bringing in a co-pilot. My co-pilot today, you may have heard him already on episode 9. I can't keep track of the numbers. With David last week, Aaron, host of Radioactive Ramblings. How you doing, Aaron?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me. It's good to be here for back-to-back episodes of Andor.
Very cool. And in case people are just John super fans and didn't listen to any of the other podcasts last week, what's Radioactive Ramblings? What do you do?
We are primarily a Fallout podcast, I would say, but we dabble into anything animated, superhero related. We've done a lot of coverage of Boys, Invincible, things like that. So we're a little all over the place, but right now we're kind of focusing on Fallout.
Very cool. Very cool. And you just got a release date for season 2, right?
We did. It's coming in December, so we're going to be doing full coverage of that. And until then, we'll have some Fallout lore episodes coming out. We went on a little hiatus with those, but now with the new season announcement, No better time to start listening to those episodes and get caught up with what's happening in the Fallout universe.
Very cool. And I'm impressed that they're doing like a year and a half in between, because today, that's nothing. That is like next month.
Seriously. I'm surprised at how quickly they turned that around, especially because filming just wrapped up, I think, this week.
Yeah. And it is, I mean, I guess it probably has fewer special effects than, you know, Andor. And, but yeah, I don't know how they do it.
Yeah.
I guess we'll see. When it inevitably gets delayed to next June, I'll talk to you then.
Let's hope not. I'll be real sad if that happens.
No, it's not the video game industry where everything gets delayed. It's the TV industry where some things get delayed.
That's right.
So this is the last arc. This is the finale of this show, and then we can all go watch Rogue One. Don't worry, everybody. It's coming. But we get this nice bottle episode almost. I guess it's not a bottle episode, but it's centered on two characters. There's no Cassian in it. I think this might be the first episode without Cassian. So I wanted to get your hot takes first.
All right. What are they doing with the timeline? I don't know what's happening. According to Tony Gilroy, the Empire has just been around for the past 30 years. I don't know what's happening in this show.
Well, I don't think Clea is supposed to be very old. I think she's probably like early 20s.
Yeah, I don't think that either of those characters are old. I just think that are old compared to where they started off with the flashbacks. It's just the whole Dedra Imperial Kinderblock aspect of it I was willing to let go, but The timeline infractions seem like they're going a little bit further and further. That's really my only complaint with this episode. I thought it was really fantastic otherwise.
You know, I could absolutely see that entire flashback sequence being like 10 to 12 years.
Interesting.
You know, she was like, let's say she was 10 at the beginning, And it's been 12 years. She's 22 now. I think that's a reasonable. Although Luthen seemed to age more than she did, honestly. Maybe they went a little overboard on the de-aging for him. I mean, it looked good, but they might have gone a little too young.
Yeah, it reminded me a little bit of Robert De Niro in The Irishman, watching Luthen get de-aged. It freaked me out.
I didn't watch that because I didn't have 3 days to devote to it.
That movie was ridiculously long. I don't blame you.
So what else are you thinking on this?
The dagger aspect, it felt impractical for Luthen, this sort of master, spy master type of character. I thought that he maybe could have done a little bit better with that. He, mm-hmm. I don't know if that was a deliberate character choice, like he's getting sloppy, or if that was an oversight from the writers, but I thought that was an interesting choice that they made.
Mm. Let's circle back to that when we get there,
yeah.
Because that's an interesting point, and I'm going to push back on you a little bit.
Okay, I'm looking forward to it. And then my last hot take, Kleia has secured a role alongside Luthen in my top 5 Star Wars character list,
yeah,
for sure. She's they were great. Just fantastic, yeah.
I am really glad she survived this episode. I hope she survives the series. And I hope if we start doing some more New Republic-y stuff, we see her. Maybe she's working for Hera next in the Ahsoka season 2, right?
Absolutely. Watch us both say that, and then in the next 2 episodes, Kleia bites the dust.
Oh, man. What did I do? I had so many tinfoil theories with Jean last week. And it was, by the end of the arc, I was just eating my words. I was painting clown makeup on.
What about you, John? What were your hot takes?
We wanted Luthen backstory, right? We've been saying it the whole time. We gotta find out more about him. I'm so glad that they were able to devote a whole episode to it. I'm so glad that we got to see their relationship. I'm so glad that he got to go out sort of on his own terms. And I'm glad that we got maybe oblique, maybe, you know, just enough references to the Death Star to make me happy.
Yeah, they did a good job of weaving in those Star Wars references into this very un-Star Wars-y show.
I don't think it is un-Star Wars, though. And I always have an issue with people saying, like, it's not really connected to the lore. It's like, yeah, there are Force users in the universe, but they are few and far between these days, right? The yeah. Empire did do... Even if 10,000 Jedi survived, there's how many different systems, and they're all hiding. And I think it makes total sense that we've seen one Force user in this series when we're talking about just regular people, especially in impoverished communities. You know, I think this makes total sense. And that the time we finally see a Force user is in the Rebel base where they don't have to hide.
That's a great point, because one of the biggest criticisms I see online of the Star Wars universe is that it feels too small for having all these millions and millions of planets that are to be visited. And this show really does a good job of making the universe feel massive, like it should.
Yeah, as much as people say, like, oh, it doesn't really go in the lore, like, I think it does. Like, I absolutely think it does. This is the experience of most people in the Empire, is this... No magic around. You are handling everything yourself, and you just have to do the dirty work. And I'm glad that we're getting to see this side, because there is no Luke Skywalker without Luthen Rayal, Sergeant Leader.
Yeah, this is definitely the world where Han Solo questions whether the Force is real or not.
Right. That's a great point. Is he even doesn't believe, like, people don't believe that the Force is real because they just don't see it anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, why don't we get right into the episode, because there's going to be a lot to talk about. I know. I poked fun at David during our Last of Us recording. I said, let's look at our 3 podcasts for each week. Every week I go an hour 10. Alicia goes like an hour 45. David goes 2 hours, 45 minutes. So I'm always going, am I doing too little? And then I'm like, no, there's one episode to talk about. So, you know what, everyone? If you think I'm doing too little, you write in. You write in. You let me know that I should be examining, I don't know, the plans of the Death Star more closely.
It's funny. Before Dave and I started the recording last week, he was commenting on how amazing your outline skills are and how perfect you've gotten it down.
Well, I appreciate that. I often think I am by the seat of my pants, so I'm glad he perceives it that way. I think he's really thorough. I mean, he notices visual things that I never notice. And that's really impressive to me, because it's just not in my skill set and not in my wheelhouse. Like, I just don't notice it. And then he points it out. I'm like, oh, that's really cool. He's very, very smart on that stuff. Let's all say nice things about each other now. And I was telling him, I listened to your episode 9 coverage, and then I thought it was a really great balance of that kind of expertise and then your political expertise. That was really interesting.
Hopefully I can bring something to the table every once in a while.
there's politics here. I mean, I think a little less so in this episode, but still there.
Yeah.
Still there for sure. It's funny, we got a couple we got a couple reviews on our two of our feeds about this show, I think, and they were like, "You guys are comparing to real world politics too much." And I'm like, "Guys, Star Wars started off as a criticism of the Vietnam War that was occurring at the time. And yeah. then the prequel trilogy was about the Iraq War at the time. If you're watching this and you're not picking up on what Tony Gilroy is putting down about things happening right now, I'm sorry, but you're putting up blinders."
Yeah, that's the great thing about this show and just Star Wars in general. Even if you don't want to view it that way, there's just no getting around the fact that Star Wars is inherently political. We don't have to call it out. We don't have to belabor the point, but it is just an inherently political mm-hmm. property.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think anyone's used names of current politicians on this podcast. No. Nor will I, because I try to make this an escape. But at the same time, like, you can't avoid comparing to the real world right now. I mean, people are disappearing. People are yeah. disappearing in the real world. And that's exactly what happens in the Empire. And I think that's intentional on the part of Tony Gilroy, is let's draw attention to the way that these systems work. And frankly, I don't know how to not compare when the people post pictures of themselves holding red lightsabers generated by AI. Oh, they made the lightsabers red.
How much clearer can it get, right?
I didn't do it. I didn't do it. You can go on Twitter. It's right there. Okay. That's the end of my rant about how Star Wars is political. And if you don't see it, you're not paying attention.
Yep.
All right, Mr. Political Science Whiz. Let's get into let's get into the episode. So we got Lonnie first. Poor Lonnie. Oh.
Poor guy.
Lonnie calls an emergency meeting with Luthen in a public park. He tells Luthen that he's burned his cover by accessing Dedra's personal files and learning that Luthen is likely to be raided at any moment. He has also learned that the Empire is building a super weapon, which we know to be the Death Star. While Luthen promised Lonnie safety on Yavin, he instead kills him and rendezvous with Clea, telling her the truth about Galen Erso's design. So I just want to say, Lonnie figured out everything with this. Like, he had the design, the designer, he had what they're going to different planets for, Jeddah, Gorman, all this.
He might be the best double agent in the history of this universe. He really...
Yeah, right?
He was doing some great detective work, and it makes me wonder. He mentioned something about having Dedra's access. Now, do you think that Dedra has access to all of these Death Star plans, things like that, or is he tapping into multiple sources of information?
So I do think he got it from Dedra, but I don't know why she has access to that, because she was just told. I mean, it's been 4 years since the beginning of this, or 3 years since the first arc. And maybe she's gotten more looped in by Partagaz. I don't know, but we do know she wasn't told about it in that meeting. It was told that she was told it was the power project.
Yeah, that's a good point. She was still operating under that facade. So there has to be a small inner circle that has that information within the ISB. And I'm interested to know if Partagaz is one of the people who is aware of the Death Star.
Yeah, it's tricky. I was even wondering, like, does Partagaz know about the Death Star?
Right.
Like, how high up do you have to be to know about this? Krennic for sure knows. And we know Krennic took a liking to Dedra in the first episode of the season. So my question is, maybe he was trying her out for Death Star Academy? Mm-hmm. I don't know. And honestly, it is the year that this battle is going to happen. There's a lot of people who now work on the Death Star. So how many people now know, and how are they just having trouble keeping a lid on this now?
That's true. I mean, millions of people had to be involved in the creation of the Death Star. Construction aspect of it, not even thinking about the mining and the designing, all of that. Yeah.
Well, we know a lot of them didn't even know what they were doing, though, right? Because you had Narkina 5 was making pieces of the Death Star, and they didn't even know it.
Right. Yeah. My first thought when I watched this whole sequence with Luthen and Lonnie deserved so much better than what he got in the end.
He did. And I feel so badly for his family. But I actually think they're going to be fine because of what happens later.
Yeah. That's a good point. I think that with Lonnie dead, maybe the Empire won't care as much about his family. So,
well, I don't think it was just that. I think what... Okay, I want you to put this together with me.
Yeah.
Dedra gets arrested later. Lonnie is found dead in a park on a day when Dedra is going rogue. And the last activity he did was to enter Dedra's files. Don't you think that instead of assuming he's a rebel, Partagaz and Hirt come to the conclusion that Lonnie figured out something compromising about Dedra and she offed him?
That's a great point. I hadn't connected those dots. That's
because I was trying to figure out what they were arresting her for. And that's what I think what they were doing.
Yeah, I think another part of why they might be arresting her, authoritarian governments really enjoy discarding people once they don't perceive that they have a use for them anymore.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I think that as soon as Dedra is done with everything on Gorman, and now especially if she starts kicking up trouble with the whole Axis aspect, the Empire might just figure that she's more trouble than she's worth to them.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I was predicting with Jean that they were gonna that Cassian was gonna be successful, and Partagaz was gonna be like, "All right, one thing off my list today. Now I have some free time." I don't know. Like, I do agree with you that she is being treated as disposable now. I wonder at what point she became disposable in the eyes of Partagaz.
Yeah, and how many other Dedras have found themselves in the same position that Partagaz has put her in?
Yeah. Yeah. I honestly think once she failed on Ferrix, she was already on the shit list. And even though Partagaz goes, this is going to seem like a demotion, it was a demotion. He was using her for her skills. He was using her as a useful idiot, right? Yeah. And he was having her orchestrate the lockdown on or the crackdown on Gorman. But once it's time for someone to call the shots, he calls in a different commander that she has never met. So I don't think she was ever going to get glory from this.
Right. And I think the only thing that could save her in the next two episodes is it seems like Krennic took a little bit of a liking to Dedra and a personal interest in her career. So maybe
Krennic doesn't have a lot of runway left either.
Yeah, that's very true. If we'll see him in Rogue One getting choked by Vader.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, it's a tough position for Dedra, and I don't feel badly for her. She did orchestrate a genocide.
Yeah.
And with no remorse.
And she put her boyfriend into some pretty awful situations on Gorman.
Yeah, she did.
Yeah.
And I can't say poor Cyril either. I just can't bring myself to do it.
No. They're both terrible people. Or I guess one of them is... were terrible people.
One of them is war criming. The other one is just like passively fascist.
Passively fascist.
He's a fascive. Okay. All right. I'm done. All right. I want to ask you, you know, all season Luthen is going, I need the end game. And he gets the end game here. Aren't you glad that Luthen found out the end game before he died?
In a way, I am. But on the other hand, he's done so many terrible things that I don't know if he deserved to get that ending. That I don't know. It's just this guy is using the tools of his enemy. I mean, he says it himself. And
yeah. Yeah.
As much of a release as that was for him, as an audience member, I don't know that I really appreciated it as much.
Hmm. I mean, he does pass it along. He doesn't keep it to himself, thankfully.
Yeah.
I'm right glad to that Clea
knows.
Yeah. And I love that she repeats it back in what it serves a double purpose, right? Because one, it's telling us as the audience what exactly he learned, and it's telling us that she is repeating it back so she memorizes it and she's able to bring it to Yavin and talk about it.
Yeah. Was it just me or was that stairway scene really stressful? I kept waiting for someone to overhear them.
Right? Yeah. But I do think that's part of Luthen's MO, right? Is hiding in plain sight.
Yeah.
Nobody would care about their conversation. So they're private.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Like, if you're sneaking around, you're actually more suspicious than if you're just in plain sight talking about your war crimes.
Yeah, they could be talking about anything on that stairway. People are rushing past them, not really listening. It would be like having that conversation in the New York subway, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what do you think about Lonnie withholding the information that he had access to Dedra's files for a whole year?
I think that was the smartest thing he could have done. I think he was 100% correct that Luthen would have pushed him to use that if he had known about it.
But why now? Oh, because he said his friend tipped him off, right? His friend tipped him off that something was going on with Dedra. Okay, sorry.
Yeah.
Answering my own question here.
Yeah, that, and I think he gets the idea that both himself and Luthen are out of room. They have to run. There's no space left for them in this place.
Well, that's true. Although I don't think Lonnie's ever leaving Coruscant.
No, sadly.
Neither of them. I mean, Luthen gives him the name of Yavin. I was surprised he gave him a truthful name, but maybe the best lies are hidden in a truth, right? He'll tell him Yavin is the safe place, but he's not going to make it there.
Yeah, with how many people are in and out of Yavin, does it ever make you question why the Empire hasn't found out about it yet?
So Yavin is in the Outer Rim, and I don't know how familiar you are with Star Wars geography, but the Outer Rim essentially was only, like, the hyperspace lanes that were safe to go to the Outer Rim were only really established in the High Republic era. It was not really very safe to go to the Outer Rim then. So a lot of the Outer Rim is still pretty wild. People don't actually know what's going on a lot of planets out there. They know, but they don't, and so they are on the fourth moon of a planet in the Yavin system. And so if they go out to the Outer Rim, go to like a different planet, and they take sort of a side route there, I think they're fine. I'm sure they have to be careful about what hyperspace lanes they're taking. Like, they're not going direct Coruscant to Yavin. But I think if they're careful enough, they could do it. And once you're in hyperspace too, it's really, you can't track people through hyperspace until the sequel trilogy when they change that.
Yeah. So, a quick lore clarifying question for you. You said that the whole system is Yavin. So, Yavin 4, I believe, is the one where the Rebel base is?
Yeah, and Yavin 4 is the fourth moon of a planet in the Yavin system.
Okay.
I learned that from Alicia in her lorecast, her holocron lorecast with David last week.
Awesome. I'm going to have to give that a listen. I haven't gotten around to it yet.
It's a great listen. I'd recommend. Season pass, everybody. It's still available. And I know David's so excited for the show. He's like, I'm just going to keep doing holocron episodes until I get tired of it. So I don't know. listen to David's holocron show on the season pass or the regular subscription.
Yeah, the lore episodes are a lot of fun.
Yeah. All right. Well, any other thoughts on this scene?
No, I think that's it for me.
Okay, well, let's take a quick break. When we get back, we'll move on to the shop. Are you looking to get more out of the Rebellion but don't want a recurring subscription? Check out our Andor Season Pass, linked in the show notes, where you'll get bonus holocron episodes diving deep into the lore behind the series, Alicia's Rebel Squadron Radio briefing you on the timeline, and ad-free versions of our coverage of Seasons 1 and 2. All that for a one-time purchase of $10. Whether you're with us for the season or the long haul, welcome to the Rebellion, and may the Force be with you. And we're back. So, we've got our lovely scene with Luthen doing his act for one more time. I'm calling the scene Axis. Luthen pours hot metal into what looks like hard drives to cover his tracks, just as the doorbell to his shop rings. Dedra arrives and puts on a ruse of interest in the shop, presenting Luthen with the Imperial Starpath unit he bought from Cassian in Season 1. After some choice words, Luthen turns around, and Dedra smells the smoke of the hard drives. She realizes Luthen has mortally wounded himself with an antique knife and races him to a medical facility.
The Starpath unit was a fantastic callback to the first season. I loved that.
Especially because Luthen didn't even want it, right? This was a nothing thing to him. This was just his gateway to Cassian.
Mm-hmm. If I remember correctly, Starpath units were a big thing in the Knights of the Old Republic games.
Okay.
I seem to remember them having some kind of importance in the story. Lore people or anyone else, correct me if I'm wrong.
What is a Starpath unit, ChatGPT?
I think... Oh, God, I'm going to butcher this and someone is going to yell at me online.
Oh, but, well, they do that anyway.
Yeah, I think that the Starpath unit is a very old school version of a hyperspace navigation system. That's what I interpreted it as.
Okay, so with it, you can track Imperial fleet movements because it contains uncoded Imperial data.
Okay.
So that's why it's so important, is it's just you can predict where Imperial ships will be.
I see. Gotcha. I must be thinking of something completely different then.
So, first of all, do you agree with me that these are hard drives that he's pouring hot metal over?
They look like it. I'm sure it has to be some sort of information drive. Otherwise, he wouldn't be too worried about destroying it. If it was just the communication device.
Yeah.
And he gets busted for having that. I don't see that having a whole lot of use to them unless it's directly connected to some of the listening devices that they have planted in the artwork.
Yeah, maybe. That's true. Yeah, that and or maybe they'll be able to pretend to be Luthen or just listen in to rebel activity. But at the same time, they're not going to know the safe word, so they're not going to be able to talk back or anything like that.
Yeah.
They don't have friends everywhere. Dedra certainly not.
Dedra's becoming very unpopular in these past few episodes.
Girl's got no friends. Her boyfriend's dead. Her friends are arresting her. It's not great. It's not great for Dedra.
Nope. I'm very curious to hear your pushback on my knife criticism.
Okay, so he stabs himself with a knife. So I think this is an intentional symbolic moment because the knife itself. He was talking about it a minute ago, right? Saying, like, you can't tell if it's real or not. We're still deciding. It thickens. That's him talking about himself, right? Like, am I real? Is this a real thing? Or am I really the shop owner that's all bubbly and, you know, rich person laugh? I saw a TikTok the other day that reminded me of Luthen. It was when you don't look at the prices before going to the menu and then you hear the table next to you laughing and they're like, ha, 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 ha. You're like, oh, no. Oh, no, this is a rich person restaurant.
Yeah, any restaurant that doesn't put the prices on the menu. That's, right. Yeah.
It's bad news for me. I'm not going there.
No.
So, yeah, we have the symbolic thing. I also think it would make sense for him to be in the middle of, you know, doing his destruction of his records. And maybe he doesn't have time to procure any like poison pills or anything like that. Poison tablets.
That's true. The only thing that I think of with that is Luthen, after his conversation with Lonnie, seems like he knows he's done for.
Mm-hmm.
So even before then, his conversation with Clea about how all of their perfect has run out, which, by the way, great line.
Yeah.
It just screams to me that he knows he's about to die. Mm-hmm. And Luthen seems like the kind of guy to me who, no matter what, he's prepared with the cyanide pill or whatever the Star Wars equivalent of that would be. I think that he should be ready at any time, just given his personality.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think it's debatable, like, how fast do you die from the poison? Are they going to be able to cure him in the medical bay? Like, they are on Coruscant, right? They're not in any deserted area. Get him right to the medical facility, get the antidote, and you're done. Like they got him. And then he'll be talking right away. But if he's bleeding out and they have to treat him, I you have this situation where he at least has time. And so Clea could do something. And I think you're right. He is the kind of guy to have a cyanide pill. But at the same time, I think this is just a desperate last moment of let's destroy the records. And let's just, you know, One of us has to sacrifice ourselves to this, and it's going to be me, Luthen says. Because right. Clea wants to do it, right? Clea wants to go back, and she wants to be the one to lock up shop. Mm-hmm. But that's going to be Luthen. And that was a very heroic thing of him to do in his last moments.
Yeah. I also really enjoyed, I'm sure we're going to get into this a little bit more later, but I loved the depiction of Luthen and Clea, even from the beginning of their relationship, as more like partners than having yeah. any kind of boss or underling relationship, especially because Clea came to him as a child, mm-hmm. and it probably would have been very easy to depict it that way. But it felt like they were almost equal in their relationship from the beginning, even if Luthen mm-hmm. was maybe, he was trying to impart a few lessons here and there as the older person in the relationship.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she could definitely tell him, like, no, we're not doing this. And he would listen.
Yeah, absolutely. Just such respect there between these two individuals.
Did you see that meme? I think somebody shared it in our Discord that was, it was said, the rebellion at 99%, and it's just Clea.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, I mean, she is carrying the team here.
Yeah.
And I guess she's got to get off to Yavin after this.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see the role that she plays in these last two episodes.
Yeah, for sure. I do hope we see more of her after Andor. You know, this is one of her first acting roles, you know that? Like, she's a brand new actor.
No, she's killing it for being one of her first acting roles.
I think her first role was in, like, 2020 or something like that. It was early. I guess that's 5 years ago. It's not that new.
Everything after COVID just feels like one long fever dream of a year.
That's right. Well, I for one really love the fact that Dedra is also putting on a mask when she comes in. She's like, oh, hello. Oh, you're open. That's great. Oh, I'm so nervous that it's not going to be fantastic, that it's not going to be great. And I just love how they both let the mask slip at the same time.
Yeah, they both kind of tip their hat at once, mm-hmm. and it's great. What a move from Dedra to not inform her supervisor that she's found access.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was crazy to me.
She wanted, but here's the thing, like, we were rooting for her in season one because she seemed to be so competent, but Hirt points out in season two, and he was right in the end, that she does have an ego, that she does want some level of glory here and recognition, and that does get in her way. And here that does. She wanted to be the one who took access, and she didn't tell Hirt about it. She didn't say, let's do a partnership. She just goes for it, and because she is doing her evil monologue, and she gets distracted by Luthen's, you know, sabotage of his own equipment, Luthen has the opportunity to kill himself.
Yeah. And back to what you were saying, it's in these fascist regimes, so many of these individuals want to seem like they don't care about the glory. They don't care about the power. They're just mm-hmm. doing this for the good of everyone. That's the line that they always want to use, is that they're doing it for the greater mm-hmm. good, for security, for whatever. And deep down, all they care about is having that power, having that recognition. They want their face right. to be known, and they want people to be afraid of them.
Yeah, it's power for the sake of power after a time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we have this whole scene where they have their masks slipping. I love... Oh, he's got him on consignment. He's doing his whole thing, right? And Dedra just smiling away. Like, I don't think I've ever seen her smile so much.
Yeah. That's how we knew right away that she was coming to get him, is because she was smiling.
Right. The real Dedra would come in and be like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. I don't even remember her smiling at Cyril.
No, I don't think so. She goes, turn off the lights.
Like, yeah,
what a way to seduce someone. You go, turn off the lights. Turn off the lights.
I don't want to see your face.
That's right. Dedra, big fan of paper bags, we've learned.
Yep.
But yeah, it's her moment, and she botches it because she can't let it go quickly.
Yeah. I was surprised that she was able to corral the resources that she had when she mm-hmm. was at that shop without having informed Partagaz.
Yeah. Well, they did find out, though. Like, everybody yes. found out anyway. So
right.
I'm sure later everybody was like, it went bad. She did it.
Yeah.
Something else that's great too is that Luthen doesn't assume, like many people do, like, I could withstand questioning. They're not going to get anything out of me. Mm-hmm. And Luthen goes, yeah, they'll probably get something out of me, and that's not worth it. So I'm just going to die.
Yeah. I think I talked a little bit about this last week when I was chatting with David, but I'm glad that in media we're getting more and more representations of people being realistic about torture.
Mm-hmm.
No one can realistically withstand torture. That's just not within...
Except John McCain. Put some respect on his name.
Yes. Very few exceptions to the rule. But even in video games, television, movies, we're getting so many more realistic depictions of people not getting upset about it either. They have the realistic idea in their mind that no one can be expected to withhold information when they're going through such horrific treatment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as we know from torture too, you often get wrong information because they just want it to stop.
Exactly. We see that all the time. False confessions.
And people justify it. It's like, oh, anything to get the information, but it's proven to be less effective at getting information. I think people just like to torture people. A lot of people just have some evil bugs in them.
Yeah. Dr. Gorst was certainly getting a kick out of his torture.
Yeah. And until we have Bix's Mission Impossible walking away from the explosion.
Oh, that was awesome.
Yeah, it was, but I was like, all right, this is a little cheesy. We're walking away with the explosion.
After everything she had been through, I was like, she's earned this one. She's earned this one.
We've earned this one. No need to call Tom Cruise. We have Cassian next to you.
Exactly.
Is Tom Cruise Mission Impossible? Is that a thing? Am I doing the wrong franchise?
No, I think you're right. Tom Cruise. Okay. Yeah, I've never seen a Mission Impossible movie. That's my confession of the day.
Well, longtime listeners know I don't watch movies, so this is a big problem for me. I watch movies for 11sies, and that's it.
Yeah, none of the action ones ever make it out of my list. None of the John Wicks or any of that.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I'm not a big action movie fan either.
Yeah.
So we have this whole scene. Anything else on this scene?
No, that's it for me.
And then, of course, the downfall of Dedra resulting from this. Dedra isolates the floor holding Luthen and promises to have him ready for questioning soon. Meanwhile, Partagaz learns of the botched raid and the death of Lonnie Young. Heert confronts Dedra and arrests her.
It's great to see her feeling so safe and just have that ripped away from her when she gets arrested.
Yeah. And you know she still thinks she can talk her way out of this.
Oh, absolutely.
She's like, fine, I'll go with you. She didn't put up a fight. Well, she, you know, she argued, but she didn't really put up a fight.
Yeah. In her mind, she's going to be detained for maybe an hour or two. Yeah. They're going to ask her a couple of questions. And then she probably thinks that she's going to get a promotion after everything is said and done. Once Axis is done.
Yeah, she goes, I have time to kill. He's got to recover. That's fine.
Yeah. It's also really great at showing us the internal politics of the ISB and how cutthroat they are with one another. Anyone is willing to screw over the other guy if they think there's a promotion in it.
It also has, and I was thinking about writing a blog post about this, don't tell David, but evil sowing the seeds of his own destruction, right? Is, you know, Dedra gets demoted, and so she worms her way in and finds out about all this stuff. You have Heert, who's jealous of Dedra and sees her as a threat, so he removes her from the situation. If Dedra were still on the floor when Clea gets up there, I don't think Clea gets to Luthen. I think Dedra stops her. Mm-hmm. I think Dedra is smart enough to stop Clea.
Maybe. That's a battle of wits that I wouldn't want to put a bet on, because I think that Dedra certainly has the upper hand. She has all of her troopers with her, all of that. But I think Clea, on the whole, is just a much more competent individual than Dedra. So
certainly more careful.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, Dedra was careful in season one, but I think she's lost that. She's gotten more desperate as she goes.
Yeah, it reminds me of in the first season when Andor is talking about how comfortable all of these Imperials get, and Dedra certainly has fallen into that. Yeah.
Yeah. But what I mean about them sowing the seeds of their own destruction is just this idea of, like, the more they destroy, the more they radicalize people, you know, on Gorman and things like that. This whole thing with Dedra, they destroy one of their top agents because they can't handle giving her a real assignment. She makes one mistake and you know, that's the end of her career, basically. And of course, this is what I mean with Lonnie being blamed on Dedra, is Partagaz learns about the botched raid and the death of Lonnie within, like, seconds of each other. And yeah. So I think that's what makes him initially put it together. Like, something's happening right here on Coruscant. Two things can't be a coincidence. It's probably Dedra's fault. Let's move on.
Yeah. I wonder how long it'll take them to figure out that Lonnie was a mole. I wonder how long that realization is going to take. Really? I got the feeling that if Lonnie didn't get out of there right then and there, they were pretty much already going to find out that the seeds of him, yeah.
But I think his death and this mistaken blame on Dedra will get the fuzz off of his family. You know, like, they are not going to be blamed for this anymore. He's not going to be blamed for this anymore. They're going to think, oh, he figured out she was going to do the raid and he got shot. He was actually a hero of the ISB. I think he goes down with, like, honors.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I think that even if they do find out internally what he was up to, they might still give him the honors after his death just to create a hero. Face. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's absolutely something that the Empire would do.
Yeah, little bit of PR that they can get in their favor right now, especially after Mon Mothma's speech. What was it, a year ago in the timeline here?
Yeah, a year ago.
Yeah. They need every little bit of help they can get from the general public.
Yeah, I mean, like, look what these rebels do. They kill our regular people, and Dedra was one of them, and yeah. I do think that I think if he had lived, he would have gone down as a rebel, and if because he died, though, he gets to stay clean.
Yeah.
And his family hopefully gets to stay clean too.
Yeah. And how powerful is that story? A top ISB officer killed by rebels in the capital in a public park.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. How did Luthen hide? Like, are there silencers for blasters?
Okay. This is a little bit off topic of your question, but did you notice that they were using real guns at many points in this episode?
Yeah. Yeah, they are. They're playing a little fast and loose.
Yeah, I think Clea had a real gun during her raid on the hospital, and then when they had the evidence bag, they put a real gun into the evidence bag.
Yeah, and Tony Gilroy's going, "It shoots lasers. Shut up, everybody."
Yep.
Oh, it's so bad. Yep. So bad. Yeah. I love the downfall of Dedra. I think we've talked about it plenty, but it's a good moment. It's a happy day for me in my household to watch Dedra go down. Do you think we see her trial, or you think, I mean, this show, the style of it is often just, like, off screen. She's gone. Once she's gone, she's gone. She's disappeared. The Empire is great at disappearing people.
I think that she still has a role to play. I think that we'll at least see her be questioned. Yeah, at least questioning, and then we'll go from there. I don't want to give myself too many promises, because then I'll lose some internet points, but yeah.
All right, we'll see what happens. All right, let's take one more break and get back and finish the episode. We're back. I call this next section When We Need to Be. Clea works her way through the hideout and into the hospital as she reflects on her relationship with Luthen. Luthen Rael, formerly Imperial Sergeant Lear, see that? See how he flipped that? Yeah. found Clea hiding in a vent while on a military operation. He leaves the military, bringing Clea with him. As Clea grows, the two begin missions in sabotaging the Empire, including blowing up a bridge of stormtroopers. He urges her to store her anger and hatred for the right moment.
All of these flashbacks that we got just tied everything together for me. Initially, when I was putting in my notes for this, I thought that I wanted a little bit more of Clea's backstory, but I think we might get that in the future.
There's still people pushing for her to be Cassian's sister. I don't like that theory. I think that's too cutesy. That makes Star Wars a smaller world.
Yeah.
But maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe if it was a different writer, I could see that happening. I don't think Tony Gilroy would go for that. It feels like a little bit too much of low-hanging fruit for him.
For sure. I mean, it's Star Wars. 77. He's kissing his sister. You know, fast forward 3 years and like, there is another.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if anyone online is trying to search and figure out if maybe he was on Canary when all of that was going down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They do know he's Canary, right? They have his whole backstory, the Empire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did you think about Luthen's breakdown inside of the his ship before he meets Clea?
He was struggling.
Yeah.
He was on the struggle bus, right? He was really, really having a hard time reconciling the war crimes they were doing.
Yeah.
And I love his, it's resetting. What am I supposed to do?
Yeah. I wonder how he got to be a lieutenant in the Imperial military with reservation he has. Or sergeant, thank you.
I think.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you're right.
All of the military ranks when it comes to Star Wars kind of bleed together because they just throw around things.
Besides, you have to say lieutenant with the Imperial military since they all have British accents for some reason.
That's very true. No, I thought it was fantastic. I enjoyed him dodging being out in the field a little bit.
I mean, I like to think he was in it when he needed to be. You got to remember the Empire was conscripting people like a lot at this time.
Right.
And I think he was in it when he needed to be. And he was a good soldier until this mission. And this mission, he saw they were like hunting down kids. Because otherwise, why is Clea hiding?
Yeah, that's a good point. And one of the officers under his command even says something that indicates that, where they're clearing out village after village, just mm-hmm. going through the houses and killing anyone who still lives there. I do wonder if they're going to tie this into an existing Star Wars lore massacre. I know that there's quite a few of those.
Say anything?
I don't have any ideas for.
Oh, I thought you had a particular thing in mind.
No, I just am hoping that they tie it to some comic. Hopefully Alicia has some ideas for us.
Alicia did write in and say the Empire has been in power 18 years by this point in Andor. I'm guessing when Luthen found Clea was around the time of Order 66.
Oh, okay.
I mean, if that's the case, she could be, you know, that would make sense if she was like 8 or 10 and now she's in her mid to late 20s.
Yeah. That certainly makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. I think that makes sense to me. That's fine if it's close to Order 66. Because right after Order 66, it's only like a year or two, and then they go, yeah, I don't think we need these clones anymore. Let's not have these clones around.
Yeah. And another great thing that the show highlights is how short-lived authoritarian governments tend to be.
Yeah.
Because the Empire lasts for, what, roughly 20 years before it collapses?
Kind of collapses. Man, I have some beef with the sequel trilogy. The more into Star Wars I get, the more beef I have with the sequel trilogy.
Yeah. What's your beef with this, or with the Star sequel trilogy? My goodness. Been a long day. I can't speak properly tonight.
I think you have these great stories with Andor, the original trilogy, Rogue One. And you have these amazing stories of heroic actions to take down authoritarianism. And then you blow up the New Republic. You completely undo what happened not that long later. To me, that kind of just undermines the whole thing. I would understand if you made it so that, all right, the New Republic was kind of weak. A separate entity comes up and is like, let's try to retake it for the dark side. But I think destroying the full Senate, the full government of the New Republic was a disastrous mistake. And bringing back Palpatine, I mean, don't get me started on that one.
Yeah, I hated it a lot more when they first did it. And since then, with all of the Mandoverse shows, they've kind mm-hmm. of, they've brought me back a little bit from that. But
I liked
not
it more
enough.
Before. And I, the more I watch and the more I read, I'm reading the Legends Thrawn trilogy right now. And I'm like, oh, this is better though. Yeah. You know, like we still have a similar conflict of like the remnants of the Empire fighting the New Republic, but it's just done so much better. They could have just adapted this, my God.
Yeah, it did. One, I don't want to talk about the new trilogy too much, but another thing that just angers me so much about those is that only one system had to be destroyed pretty much for the whole thing to collapse.
There was no redundancy on the New Republic.
Yeah.
Again, I don't want to make this a podcast about the sequels, but yeah. The second movie, The Last Jedi, I actually really liked because I thought it raised really interesting questions about the Jedi that I don't think were adequately raised in even the prequel trilogy, where it's pretty critical of the Jedi.
Yeah.
And I thought it continued a line that is often forgotten, that the Jedi were extremely prideful and they honestly contributed to the fall of the Republic as much as anybody else.
Yeah, that's a great point.
So, J.J. Abrams needs to stop writing Star Wars. That's my whole rant tonight.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to be inviting him back anytime soon.
No. I am not a fan of like retconning things and you know saying like this didn't happen. But if tomorrow George Lucas bought back Star Wars and then said the sequel trilogy didn't happen, we're going to do a new one, I would not be mad.
Yeah, I don't think I would be too mad about it either. Even if they just took the same cast and made the movies in a different way. Yeah.
Do something with John Boyega's character.
Oh my God. Biggest missed opportunity of that. I know. Movies. Yeah.
I know. They did him dirty.
Yeah.
So back to Luthen and Kleya. There was another lore bit from Alicia. Rosh Ni Lutz is something that Luthen says. Luthen was speaking the language of his native Fondor, a planet in the colonies that became a manufacturing hub for the Empire, which is probably where his trafficking of Imperial parts began. So that's interesting.
That is very interesting. The name Fondor is really, it sounds familiar to me, but I don't know. I can't really recall too much of the lore. It's been too long since I've been deep into it.
They eat a lot of fondue there. That's really all I know about it. Their cakes all have fondant on them.
Ooh, don't bring me there.
Who among us hasn't watched Cake Boss?
I have not watched Cake Boss. I can sit through some Great British Baking Show for a while, but I have not seen Cake Boss.
Actually, I don't think I have either. I think I watched Ace of Cakes. That was a different show.
Okay.
Before your time. Don't worry.
Too many baking shows out there to catch up with.
I don't know. See, when I was a kid, we didn't have streaming yet. And so you had to watch what was on the stupid TV, and sometimes it was Ace of Cakes.
I think that my generation came at a weird time, because when I was a kid, we still had the joint VHS DVD player in our living room. Mm-hmm. So I think us 04 kids have a strange childhood. Just a lot of changes, yeah.
Yeah, no, I definitely was in a very transitional phase, too.
Mm-hmm.
Another lore bit from Alicia. I'm not actually sure what she's referring to here, so hopefully you can help me. The mm-hmm. Deveronian victory necklace, the species that look like devils with two big horns on their head.
Hmm. I don't remember that either.
Yeah, I hope someone out there got something out of that statement.
Yeah. Yeah, I have no idea what that's in reference to.
I should have asked Alicia to clarify, but I didn't. So you know what, everybody? Write in if you want to know more, and Alicia will cover it on her podcast.
Good.
Yeah, and so Luthen's flipping his name. He's bringing Clay around. What do you think about the moment where he hands her the blaster, the trigger for the bombs on the bridge, and she's about to do it? He kind of goads her into doing this, and right before she does it, he's like, "No, I'll do it. I will kill the people."
I think it's a great parallel to him sacrificing himself in the shop. I think that those two scenes are directly related to one another, intentionally so. It's both of these scenes is Luthen taking the accountability of these horrific acts and some of the blame away from Clea.
Yeah. I agree with you, and I think it's a test of, will she do it? But as long as I know she'll do it, then I'm not going to put that blood on her hands.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Luthen is really great at doing that, where he has to sort of poke and prod and test to see what people are willing to do for him. But at the end of the day, he's already burned his decency, and he would like to save other people from doing that. That's his whole philosophy of why he does what he does, is to save others from having to act in the same despicable way that he does.
Right.
Yeah.
And at the same time, he's teaching her how to blend in, right? He goes, "No, look at me. Don't look at the place where you just pulled the trigger for the explosion. Look at me. Yeah. Now turn."
Yeah.
Okay. That was a great moment where you really see him cultivating her skills in blending in and in clandestine operations.
Yeah, absolutely. They did so much growth with her character, her childhood character, in just a few scenes. It was really impressive.
Now, his whole lecture about storing up your hatred, didn't this sound really Sithy to you?
I was just waiting for him to pull out the red lightsaber.
Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, the Legends lore had Dark Jedi. So they weren't Sith, but they were Dark Side Force users who called themselves Dark Jedi. Mm. And I think that Luthen really is like that, right? Like, he's not a Sith. He doesn't care for power. But I think if he had Force sensitivity, he'd be a Dark Side user through and through. He'd use both, right? He'd say, "These are the tools I have. I'm going to use them to destroy my enemy."
Yeah. Question for you on Luthen. We saw his background being in this war and taking part in all of these horrific events, and that's what kind of radicalizes him and pushes him towards the path that we find him on in Andor. Is there something else, maybe from way back in his life, that maybe did it as well? Or do you think it's just this incident?
I could see more in his past. I mean, obviously something instilled morality in him to the sense where he understands that war criming is bad.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's against the fascist in his eyes, right? Like, you can war crime against the fascist, just nobody else.
Yeah. He's very willing to team up with people like Saw Gerrera.
Yeah, he is. He is. He's willing to cautiously ally himself with it. He won't let his people even tell Saw who they work for.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, he is the master at arm's of secrecy. Yeah.
Well, goodbye, Luthen, because it's time to show him mercy. Clea successfully makes it to Luthen's floor, killing a few guards on the way. There, she gives Luthen one last kiss on the forehead and turns off his life support, giving him the mercy of death.
Were you expecting this?
Yeah, the minute she was going through, I was like, "Oh, she's going to kill him. She's not going to save him."
Yeah.
Especially after they say this room is keeping him alive. I think she knows that. She knows that there's no saving him from that.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly what Luthen would have wanted of her in this scenario. He doesn't want to be saved.
Right.
He wants her to protect herself and protect the rebellion.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that's absolutely right. And I mean, he killed himself, right? Like, he's the one who inflicted the wounds that are killing him.
Yeah.
And it was honestly a mercy for her to not have to pull the trigger, right? To just be able to turn it off and let him die naturally.
Absolutely. And do you think this is going to have a long-term effect on Clea, that she was the one to pull the life support? Or do you think that she'll be able to properly compartmentalize the fact that this is something that he wanted, I did this thing, but this is what should have happened.
I don't think it ever leaves you making a decision like that. But I do think she, of all the people in this show, I think she's very good at compartmentalization, right? The way she coaches Lonnie in that scene with the book, the feel book, where she needs to take the listening bug off. I mean, she goes, look at me, look at me. We're doing this right now. Move to your left. And that is somebody who knows what the mission is, when to focus on the mission, and how to tune other things out.
Yeah. I really envy people who can get into that mindset. I don't think that I'm capable of locking in that much to something.
Not like Clea. Who can? Who can lock in like Clea?
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah, it's a sad episode, but it's a good episode.
It really is. When I was watching this, I kept hoping for Luthen to survive, but at the same time, I've been waiting for him to die for the entirety of the series, so...
Yeah. I was almost surprised he lasted this long.
Right. Yeah, he... With all of the speeches that he gives and everything, it felt like he could have gone at any point, and it would have been a nice exit point for him, but they kept him around to the very end, and I'm a little surprised by that.
I'm glad, though, because he was one of the best characters in this show.
Absolutely.
And one of the most exciting characters in Star Wars in years.
Yeah. Yeah, Stellan Skarsgård is just masterclass of an actor.
Yeah, I think that's part of it, too, is they just wanted more Stellan Skarsgård in their show.
Yeah, who doesn't want more Skarsgård in their shows?
You think that even in Chernobyl, he's there, you know? You gotta just keep him going until he can't do it anymore.
Exactly, yeah.
What an actor. What a show. You have anything else on this scene or this episode that you want to talk about?
I don't think so. I think that just about exhausts my points for this. It was a really fantastic episode. I think that the emotional beats were done really well, and I'm going to be crossing my fingers that Clea survives this, and I'll probably be eating my words at the end of the night when I finish the last episode.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great show. We're going to do a wrap up, by the way. I want to tell people that we are going to do a wrap up. David, Alicia, and I are going to get together next week, and we're going to talk about the series as a whole, because otherwise I don't know how we'd wrap it up, because we haven't been together all season because of the whole, you know, David, Tony Gilroy being insane and dropping everything all at once.
Is there a Rogue One episode coming?
We did one in last year, but we might do it.
Yeah,
I don't know.
David has a retrospective million ideas. Yeah.
You know how David is. He gets on Discord and he's had his coffee and he comes in and he's like, I have an idea for 7 podcasts and a blog post. Maybe a video breakdown.
Every creative endeavor needs an ideas man.
He's got them. We got our ideas, man.
Yep. That's awesome.
But the squadrons were my idea and I want that on record.
We will make sure that goes down into the records.
That's in Clea's field book, her touch book, instead of, you know, whatever that is. That was a very cool piece of lore, by the way. Speaking of lore, Alicia wrote in with one other thing that I totally forgot to say earlier, which is the Tooka cat is the name of the creature that ran up to poor Lonnie's body on the bench. Loth cats from Rebels, if you watch that, are a type of Tooka cat.
Yeah, I immediately recognized that from Rebels. It was an awesome callback. They've done a lot of Rebels callbacks in this season.
Rebels are cool. That's the best. That's some of the best writing in Star Wars. Like, there are amazing arcs, and people discount it because it's animated. But the season 2 double finale is one of the best pieces of Star Wars media I've ever seen.
I mean, Kanan Jarrus might be one of the best written characters in all of Star Wars.
Don't tell David. He hates Kanan. I don't know why.
Really?
Yeah, that's surprising. Really hates Kanan. I love Kanan. I think he is. I agree with you. He's very well written.
Yeah.
Even Ezra, I think, is very well written, especially for a child character.
people like to call Ezra out as being really annoying in the early seasons. And every time I hear that criticism, I'm like, yeah, that's the point. He's a 13-year-old boy. Yeah, exactly. He's going to be annoying.
Exactly. Yeah. He's not, he's prepubescent, people. Can we give him a little grace?
Right.
All right. Well, we did it. Oh, you know what? We just got a piece of feedback in from Ken W. You want to read it?
Oh, yeah. Let's do it.
We've got, he said, when you want a TV show to go on forever, but they land it perfectly. You sit back and realize Star Wars can be so much more if only the suits would believe it too. Andor Wednesday will be no more. Looking forward to tuning in for Squadron Leaders and Crew and Alicia throwing in some more Star Wars lore our way. May the Force be with you, Ken W.
May the Force be with you too.
That's a nice note to leave it on, isn't it?
It is. I think we're all feeling the same way.
Well, everyone, we've got a couple more podcasts on the way. So send in very quickly. If you hear this the night it drops or the morning after it drops, send in your emails very quickly to andor@thelorehounds.com. If you want bonus content, we already did 3 Holocron bonus episodes, plus a couple other bonus things and Alicia's weekly Rebel Squadron radio, which is very cool. It tells you what's going on in the timeline at this time. Get the season pass for $10. You have it permanently. Or you could do a recurring subscription for $5 a month and get all of our bonus content. Plenty of stuff going on. So now we talk about what we're doing on the network. So on the main Lorehounds feed, we have Murderbot just starting. I'm going to be recording that with Alicia tomorrow morning. We have screeners on it, so we'll be doing day of coverage. We are finishing up The Last of Us. We have 2 more episodes. It's going okay. I may have gotten a little heated on the last podcast because this show is doing things to me. And I almost said Wheel of Time, but Doctor Who, we're finishing that up too. We have a couple more episodes. A lot of fun this season. A lot of good TV this spring going into summer. And we've got our affiliates too. So Aaron, you're one of our affiliate podcasts. You already mentioned up top what you do. You want to just talk one more time about what you're doing?
Yeah. Check out Radioactive Ramblings if you want to hear some Fallout lore coverage right now. And in addition to that, we are going to be doing a little bit later than we thought we were going to, our 1-year anniversary episode where we're just gonna sit down, talk about anything we feel like. And
is it a clip show?
It's it won't be a clip show, but it'll just be random assortment of all the games and movies and things that we've been playing lately. And we're going to talk a little bit about our journey so far. And I moved, Chase moved, and Richard is about to be moving. So it's just been a bad time for us to record that, but we will get to it. So stay tuned.
All right. Well, good luck to all of you moving. That's thank a whole you. Lot. Moving sucks. So
yeah,
good luck to you. And we've got other affiliates too. And that's Never Mind the Music, talking about music and psychology. We've got Properly Howard Movie Review, talking about movies, as the title suggests. They'll come out with a new season soon enough, as will Rings and Rituals, talking about The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power. We also have Alicia's feeds. I know she just did an episode on Tales of the Underworld, I believe it's called. That's the new Star Wars 6-episode animated series. She did that for her subscribers, her paid subscribers on her Supercast for the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast. But she's also got some public stuff coming on that feed and on World Shift Dust. If you want to get any of this, it's all in the link tree in the show notes, including, by the way, many of you I've noticed are listening on our Star Wars feed, which only has Star Wars content, and it's going to go real quiet soon. So if you want to hear more Lorehounds podcasts, we do quite a lot of these. I think we're closing in on 500 episodes. So you can go into the main Lorehounds feed by going to that link tree. You can follow it in Apple Podcasts or whatever else you use to listen to your podcasts. And go forth and be merry. Enjoy yourselves, everyone. May the Force be with you. But before that happens, I have to thank everybody. We have our Discord server boosters. Aaron K. Who's that?
I wonder who.
Tiller the Thriller, Dork of the Ninjas, Duve71, Athena A, Tina, Lestu, Nancy M, Ghost of Partition, and Radioactive Richard. I don't know who that is either. Lore Masters, Samartian, Michael G, Michelle E, Brian P, SC, Peter OH, Adam S, Nancy M, Duve 71, Brian 8063, Frederick H, Sarah L, Gareth C, Matthew M, Sarah M, Andra B, Kwang Yu, Deadeye Jedi Bob, Nathan T, Alex V, Sub Zero, Aaron K, Dally V, Mothership 61, Gnarls, Kathy W, Lestu, Jeffrey B, Elisa U, Neil F, Ben B, Scott F, Stephen N, Julia F, Kali S, Ilmariel, /Tim, and Adrian. Thanks, everyone. Join us for the other two breakdowns this week and for the Holocron this weekend. Good night.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback to StarWars@TheLorehounds.com and get ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at Patreon or Supercast. Connect with us on Blue Sky. Links for everything in the episode show notes. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.